to gas stoves in the kitchen, some household appliances burn fossil fuels. So they release planet-warming carbon pollution and contribute to climate change. But now, these appliances can all be replaced with electric models. You can use an electric heat pump to warm your home, an electric water heater for your shower, and a traditional electric stove or electric induction range to cook your food. Some of these electric appliances, like heat pumps, are much more efficient than those that burn fossil fuels. And as the energy grid gets more power from renewable sources like solar and wind, using electric appliances will cause less and less carbon pollution. Some electric appliances are also healthier. For example, air pollution from the open flames of gas stoves has been linked to childhood asthma. But electric and induction stoves do not produce any indoor air pollution. Currently, residential and commercial buildings are responsible for about 30% of global warming pollution in the U.S. But as more people switch to electric appliances and more energy comes from renewable sources, our homes will be healthier for people and the planet. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Welcome to Screen Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Screen Therapy. Having someone close to you die by suicide is a traumatic incident that will most likely be with you for life. When Lance Curran of With Patients lost his friend to suicide at age 14, it was a tragic event that affected him deeply, still affects him to this day, and likely always will. Lance has spent years parsing his grief from survivor's guilt. He didn't see that his friend was in crisis, no warning signs. Lance was the depressed kid, and suicide was prevalent in his small town. Why wasn't it him who took his own life? When Lance started playing in punk bands, it was the outlet he needed to process these difficult questions and emotions. And with many of his songs, he's been able to pay tribute to the friends he's lost.
I'm Lance Curran, the bassist and songwriter, one of the vocalists for With Patients in Chicago. I have grown up playing music since a teenager. I grew up playing in punk bands in Indiana and then moved to Chicago in early 2000s, playing in some industrial and other punk bands. Music's always just been a big part of my life. I grew up in rural Indiana, being the weird kid, a lot of struggles with depression, and my town was notoriously hard on teenagers. There's a very high suicide rate in my hometown. And when I was around 14, I lost a good friend who took his own life. And I've always struggled with survivor's guilt over that. And then, you know, that kind of caused a domino effect over the years, where a lot of the people who I was friends with during that time also took their own lives. me getting involved in the punk scene and get involved in the music scene, which wasn't easy in rural Indiana in the early 90s, saved my life. It gave me a purpose. It gave me a tribe. It gave me a way to get stuff off my chest. Like discussing mental health back in the mid 90s as a kid was pretty taboo. Even my parents at the time, like, you know, when I lost my friend, it was kind of like, hey, get over it. You know, it wasn't easy to figure out how to navigate those feelings. And I ended up getting involved in self-harm. I was a cutter and wasn't sure how to deal with my feelings. And so cutting was a way for me to feel something other than my thoughts. But then music came along and I found a much more constructive way to not only get that pain out and find people who were thinking a lot like me, but also a way to maybe help other people dealing with the same problems.
So punk rock saved my life. That's a phrase that comes up so often on the podcast and also throughout the Scream Therapy book. Whenever I hear someone say it, I get those shivers up my spine because, in fact, the very first episode I did when I was trying to figure out if this was going to be a podcast 5 years ago, the person said that very thing. And it sounds like in your case, literally, you had people that were dying all around you and you needed to find a way out of that.
Yeah, just the ability to be yourself. Where I grew up, it was very conservative. There was a certain group of people, you know, even just being into punk rock music, they started labeling you as a Satanist or like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Finding other people and just finding the music and you're hearing the words and you're feeling the things and figuring out you're not alone. Again, like I said, I mean, I struggled. I mean, I still struggle, but like really struggled severely up until like my mid-20s. And I was able to kind of deal with the depression, but, you know, anxiety kind of took over. Started having really bad panic attacks and anxiety attacks. It took me a long time to like, I mean, I went to the hospital on multiple occasions, thinking I was dying, having heart attacks. And like, I had anxiety about taking medication. To me, I was really worried it would change the creative side of me.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thinks like writing music or creating art from your pain is like sometimes necessary. And then it wasn't until like in my later 30s where a doctor's like, you know, you've been living with this for so long, you don't even know what it feels like to be normal. Why don't you just try some medication and see how you feel? And then I did it and it's been really good for me ever since. I kind of go on and off it where like, you know, I'll take it for a while and gets the noise to cut down on the anxiety side for a little bit and allows me to actually get things done. It actually lets me to be more creative and I wish I had been a little bit more open to it before that.
You mentioned survivor's guilt, and I'm wondering if you could describe what that means to you, or how it felt at the time.
Well, it was really hard because like this was a really good friend and I had no idea that he was in a bad place where like I was really a depressed kid. I had suicidal thoughts a lot. I had, you know, a lot of things going through my head. And this guy was kind of like he helped bring me out of my shell when I was like in middle school. You know, he helped becoming his friend was like kind of helped me get a little bit out of some bad spots I was in. And we did a lot of fun stuff together. And then it was a complete surprise when he took his own life. And you're kind of like, how was that not me? And also like, why did I not see something was wrong? I mean, again, I'm in middle school at the time. It's, you know, you're not really thinking anyone's going to do something like this. And then, you know, a group of my friends, we all, like a day after we found out about it, decided he did it in a local park. And we decided to walk to see where he had done it at. And it wasn't cleaned up entirely well.
Mm.
Something like this happening in a small town, I'm sure like the people who had to clean it up were affected by it quite a bit. Seeing pieces of your friend on the ground and stuff just kind of like burns into your brain.
Mm-hmm.
The two friends I walked with both took their own lives, no longer with us now. And so you start feeling like, why did they do it? Why not you? More back then where you're like, there was like a part of you that wants to do it, but you just can't follow through with it. And you're like, you feel guilty that they were able to and you weren't. As you get older, that starts to change, especially leaving my hometown. Like I moved to Chicago in 2001. That changed a lot because then you got like a huge city that doesn't care if you're different that much. You know, yeah. You're surrounded by people who are like that. And you start realizing life really can be better. Like life can get better. And I'm glad I didn't leave, you know, yeah. But I stuck it out.
You mentioned about getting into punk rock and how that saved you when you're young. And where did that fall into when your friend had died by suicide and other friends had died? Was it happening at the same time or?
Yeah, I was the one fortunate thing. I had an uncle. I don't know how he discovered music back then. You think of the internet now and how easy it is to find things, but he was like on another level, being able to find like music that you couldn't get anywhere else. And he'd make me tapes. I was like probably even elementary school. And he was making me like Dead Kennedys tapes and Sex Pistols and even like Ministry and Nine Inch Nails and My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult. Growing up in a very conservative kind of Christian area and feeling very skeptical as a kid on a lot of different things, those albums on a political side and on like on a religious side really spoke to me. It kind of ostracized me a little bit from like other people, but then you'd find those other kids that were into it and then, you know, find that voice there. I met some friends, we got along really well, and it was really after like Kurt Cobain's suicide, which was also kind of mentally hard on a young kid at the time because of his presence in that scene. Like we decided, hey, maybe we could start a band, you know, maybe we could get something going. I just remember my best friend decided he was going to be a drummer, but he didn't have a drum set. So he started getting buckets and we'd play and I had a bass amp and I'd just sing through the bass amp and he would play on the buckets and stuff. And then eventually he was able to start putting drum kit together. And it's that camaraderie of creating something together. You know, that was early high school years. You're able to like get those feelings out. Like over the years, like I've probably written more songs about my friend who committed suicide than anything else. One of the last songs I wrote about him, like one of the lyrics was like, I keep digging you up again, you know? Mm. And I just hope he understands why all these years later, it's something I think about on a regular basis, still trying to understand it, trying to understand that whole part of it, why he did it and wishing he was here. So like being able to like get that out helps you not take it out on yourself as much. And then the fact that you're saying these things and then you see other people start to sing along with you or you have a band members who are like getting into it with you, and it really is the best feeling in the world, right? When you're creating something with someone. And I just think the punk scene is just such, it completely allows you to be yourself, but there's also that DIY nature of creating art and rebellion, good rebellion, very necessary in the area we were in at the time. So
do you have one band that you would look to that was the one that filled you up and that was the one that inspired you to not only play music, but to carry on with life? I know it's hard.
I mean, it's hard, but I would probably say at that time period, it was probably Bad Religion. That really connected with me dealing with that loss. And then their political and religious viewpoints on different things really spoke to everything I was feeling and going through at the time, and still an all-time favorite band of mine. Their ability to just keep pumping stuff out.
Yeah.
In their art too, like the symbol, like the marked out cross symbol and everything. That's just such an inspiring logo. And like logos are so cool. So I think everything about Bad Religion just really motivated me. It's fun to create art and stuff still, but like it's nice when you get to be, you know, I'm in my 40s now and there's no urgency to any of it. So it's like you're just creating art for art's sake. And I don't feel like there's any super urgency with the band I'm in now. Those guys, like, it's really cool when you connect with people and you almost know what someone's going to play next. You know what they're going to like, the vibe of what you're doing. And So it brings all those feelings back even at this age.
So with the panic attacks and the extreme anxiety that you described, was that happening younger years, or you said it was more kind of onset in your 20s?
It started happening in my late teens, and I didn't know what it was. I really thought I was having a heart attack. I remember having like a girlfriend at the time and freaking her out. But for some reason, like in the early 2000s and my early 20s, it got really, really bad. No idea what really triggered it or what was happening, but I was convinced there was something wrong medically with me. Couldn't afford to go to the doctor. I didn't have insurance. I was living in Chicago. So, you know, I had several ambulance rides thinking I was having a heart attack and just had to go into debt for those things. After a while, you started trying to learn how to manage it. Little things like counting my fingers, finding ways to distract myself away from this feeling inside me to like get myself to come out of it. As the years got by, I just got better and better at that. There's still moments where I can freak out, but I start learning how to distract myself a little bit more. There's a new single coming out on our latest album called Exit As Instructed, and it's about a panic attack I had on the L train in Chicago. And I had to just keep reading the warning signs over and over again. If I could read them out loud and just like start warning, like bring myself down, because it really feels like the world's ending in your head, like your body's going crazy. It can be hard on yourself, but it can also be really hard on your friends and family to like watch you go through that. It's hard because people don't take you seriously at first. You're in your early 20s. You're not having a heart attack, but you feel like you're having a heart attack. Everything you're feeling is what textbook definition of what you think a heart attack would be. Doesn't make it better these days, looking up your symptoms on the internet.
Yeah.
That's a big no-no, but you still do it because you're convincing yourself that you have all these issues.
I have friends that are nurses, and they say you wouldn't believe the amount of people that come into the Emerge saying they had a heart attack.
Yeah.
And of course, with a lot of those, it's anxiety related.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
And then, you know, a lot of doctors at the time thought I was like on drugs, and I wasn't. You're having to deal with all these people thinking these things about you. And the biggest thing, you're just trying to figure it out. I became a dad in 2006, and I was still having panic issues. And I remember, like, I just can't be a good dad and be like this, in my opinion. Like, you know, I have to figure out how to, like, not feel this way. And it was even more serious because you're also scared because I don't want to have a heart attack and die and leave my newborn son, you know. And so I just really started trying to get more into, like, meditation and started getting more into running. I run marathons and stuff now. And like that really did help. And I think it's more the distraction. Medication, again, helped.
Because I'm on meds and I was diagnosed bipolar in 2018 and was put on meds right away. And there's a whole journey with that. Some worked, some didn't. And what I've realized now is that the medication is part of that plan. So for instance, when I start taking meds and start feeling better, now I can go for a run. Now I can eat better food. Now I can go get more support from friends. Like it's all kind of intertwined.
Yeah.
The medication is part of the whole package.
Yeah. No, I agree. Everyone's different. Some things work for some people and some people it doesn't work. I would recommend people try it. You know, if you're having these issues, I do recommend you give it a shot. Sometimes it can take some things to try some different things and it'll work. But I really like what you're doing with this show because it became very important to me to start talking about this with other people who might be suffering, especially like becoming a dad. My biggest fear is that my kids were going to grow up to have the same depression issues or certain issues that I had. And they didn't have quite the same issues, but they still had issues that they had to deal with. But luckily, I was in a place where I could talk to them more about this, get the help they needed. There's a lot more options for therapy these days than I was a kid, and they seem to be thriving. I also work for a company called Threadless.com. I started working with some mental health organizations. Like there's one in Chicago called Hope for the Day.
Yeah.
That I worked a lot with. I curated the art for their fundraisers.
Yeah, we had them on the podcast a couple of years ago.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Music's such a big part of it. And I, you know, agree completely with that. Music just has the ability to, when I get depressed, I like to listen to sad songs. It seems like it should have the opposite effect, but it doesn't. It's soothing. You relate to it and it kind of helps you get over it easier. And I've worked with the Trevor Project as well. So like trying to find ways to like give back in some way, whether that's from fundraising or just raising awareness. And I even brought Hope the Day into our company to give mental health sessions to all the employees.
Oh, cool.
It's very important to me that people take mental health seriously. I wish there were more resources when I was younger, but as I've gotten older, those resources have just become more important. I have a trans nephew and seeing how what they're going through, it's super punk rock what they're doing. You know, I just want to make sure that they have the support they need mentally to like handle some of the things they're having to go through, which is very hard these days. So I appreciate shows like this and just being able to talk. And that's so important for you to reach out to friends and reach out to people if you think they might be suffering. It never hurts to just say hi. Sometimes that's all it is. It's like a text message or anything. Be like, hey, how you doing? Can change everything for someone. So I want to encourage people to do that and try and find ways to be creative with people.
That's a really good point about reaching out, because I think that part of this whole idea of talk about mental health, get it out there, put it out in the open, is putting the onus on the people that are dealing with these issues to talk. And really what it should be is, well, first of all, both, but also people that can reach out to those folks that are dealing with things, and now they're talking about it.
Yeah.
The whole way that it's framed is you have to talk about your depression or your whatever. And it's not a conversation. It's more like I have to now give something up.
Yeah. And it's hard until someone kind of instigates. And I think not seeing my friend who committed suicide as a teenager who had no signs, there was nothing there. at least that I could see, that would tell you that this was going to happen. Part of that survivor's guilt, I wish I had reached out to him. I wish I would have done something to like find out he was hurting in some way that I didn't know. You know, you can't always save someone, but you might, you just might. So like, it can change everything. So it doesn't cost you anything just to say, hi, how you doing, to someone and be there to listen.
How do you come to terms with that guilt that you hold or have held for all this time? Or have you come to terms with it?
It goes back and forth. Part of the coming to terms with it is trying to give back and trying to do this and be better for my own kids and to their friends and the youth growing up than what I got as a kid is how I kind of come to terms with it. Writing music, keeping his memory alive. Like, I go back and forth on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, sometimes I'm like, should I just let him rest? But it helps me writing music about him to just get through those thoughts, you know, those different ideas of what, of those reasons and how they affect you. And you're never going to get over it. I think that's like the one thing about suicide that people don't realize is how much it affects your friends and family and people around you. Like, you don't get over it. It's like anything else. It can get softer, you know, like it gets easier to deal with on a day-to-day basis, but you never stop thinking about it. At least I haven't. Most people I know who've been affected by it, even if it happened when they were kids, it's always in the back of their mind somewhere. It's super hard for like a teenager to like learn how to deal with that. And that's when you get people who, you know, start cutting or finding other ways to do it. You're just not developed enough or mature enough to handle something. So, you know, the day before that, you thought you were going to live forever. Like, you're like an immortal teenager, and that's just not how life is. And then you learn a quick lesson. It's way different than losing like a grandparent or something like that, who, you know, is still hard, but losing someone your own age with something so tragic as suicide, something that feels like it could be so preventable. It's mind boggling what you do with that. And it becomes easier as an adult, but I just think it's very important to try to help kids have these tools that help them learn how to deal with these things. And hopefully it becomes less of a problem as we get older.
This is such a hard thing to understand. Suicide. I do a lot of suicide prevention crisis calling.
Mm-hmm.
And youth that are going through different things, the same kind of themes come up. But there's that combination between what's around us, environment, which can cause mental health issues, but also what we're dealing with, their own issues as well. Like, if we're depressed or we have anxiety or bipolar or whatever condition is, it's just this storm, especially now in today's world. Just the fact that you've got all this stuff swirling around, and yes, it's hard to understand why all these youth are suicidal, but then you shift your perspective and say, wait a second, it's super easy to understand why this is going on.
Yeah. And when were you diagnosed as bipolar? When did you start to recognize it?
I was diagnosed in 2018, and I didn't know what bipolar even was. But the behaviors and the symptoms, of course, I knew those. Deep depression. Things were shifting so fast with my moods. So I saw all that, doing things that I thought were like, why am I doing these destructive things? It didn't make any sense to me. Didn't align with my punk rock ethics. But then when I was diagnosed and given this name or this label, then it all kind of made sense. Now I'm in the process of trying to sort of shed the label, and it's just a way to signify something. You and I could share the same diagnosis, but be completely different.
Oh yeah, for sure. But it's nice to see. It's like when you can diagnose a problem, then you can start learning how to like treat it, right? Like, you can figure out how to like help it and also like approach the whole stigma of it. And so it's like trying to get rid of that stigma of having these type of conversations, talking about being depressed or being bipolar, or have these conversations in a way we can all actually listen to each other and have empathy. That's the hard part these days is, I mean, I live in Chicago, so like there's a bubble of what seems like a much more empathetic. If you went back to my hometown, there's like insane lack of empathy for people. Yeah. I want to make sure those kids know there's people like them out there and that they can get through this and find love and find people and ways to grow.
The punk scene is its own container.
Yeah.
You're in this punk scene and you're going to feel more comfortable to be a weirdo or to talk about these kinds of things. Bands are talking about these kinds of things. And then as someone gets more comfortable, like a queer youth that's just learning about music and gets into the punk scene, is able to dress how they want. And then eventually those things spill over into outside society. And maybe it's a bit easier to cope or to manage because you've learned some things within this container.
Yeah, for sure. it's very important. And so being able to like let it out with the punk scene and stuff like that, it gives you such an ability to let it out in creative ways. And so I'll always be thankful for being shown, I guess, being exposed to it, I suppose, from that. And I'm just glad that scene in these days and times and what we're going through is just all the more important. Doing my best to help spread the word and grow that. You know, it's awesome you're doing this show. This type of thing's important for everyone in the scene.
Have you been able to track getting into the punk scene and the trauma you were dealing with and the anxiety and those things that you were dealing with? Were you able to sort of put punk in a benchmark of, oh, things changed this way after I got into it, or this is how it was before?
In the early days, it gave me a reason to want to see the next day. You had something to get up for. You felt like you had something to fight for. It also just kind of made me a little less self-involved. It made me start thinking about other people differently and the things going on in the world and how you might be able to like actually be a part of this and help people in different ways. And that just gives you a reason to exist. At the time of younger, you felt like you didn't get to exist. And I think with the anxiety, being able to like put that anxiety into music, that anxiety into words and vocals and be able to perform it and get it out. It's kind of like a weird exorcism that punk allows you this way to like get those demons out that you need to get out. And hopefully it helps other people get their demons out as well.
That was my conversation with Lance Curran of With Patience, withpatiencechicago.bandcamp.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Clahoman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
And now, stay tuned.